Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Saving money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Jimmy Kimmel dared Adam Carolla to go on stage completely unprepared. And Adam had the balls to do it. So now you have the balls, too. Bingo balls. Adam Carolla is unprepared is coming to your town. February 8th in Connecticut. February 9th in Boston. We got a bingo ball hopper. You write down one word on it, and Adam will spontaneously create a rant around it live on stage.
Steampunk. Oh, Jesus Christ. You guys know what steampunk is? This is basically rockabilly for people that make more than $37,000 a year.
Adam Carolla is unprepared. February 8th at Foxwoods Casino in Connecticut. February 9th at the Wilbur in Boston. Get your tickets now at adamcarolla.com. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Monkey, the guitarist of Korn. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and Jordan Harbinger calls in with more success tips. And now, he followed Marie Kondo's advice and got rid of everything in his life that didn't spark joy. And now he lives alone in his Newman 935. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No church, but they got a mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for telling a friend. Love that about you. Good day, Gina Grant.
Good day to you.
Handball, Brian.
Hey, yeah. Adam. It's yeah, good yeah. to be here.
Oh.
I like the whole thing.
Hey, Adam. Yeah. It's good to be here. I'd like to take you out for an imported beer.
That's my Angela.
I think it's actually Nipsey Russell. I've been corrected on that. People say, like, no, that was Dag doing Nipsey.
Sounds like Maya.
I'm only telling you, I've been corrected multiple times.
I can't see you're talking about beer.
Nipsey did rhyme, mm-hmm. That's for sure, and Maya would, too.
They both rhyme.
I have a very distinct memory of him just sort of free-flowing Maya Angelou on that. But
and as did I. I was on board with you for that, but many people tweeted me, like, no, Nipsey Russell.
My Gio. God.
All right.
I will listen to anyone who said, I was telling somebody yesterday. I was telling someone on Friday, and this half of the show brought to you by Lowe's, Lowe's.com/M, Intuit and Intuit.com, and ExpressVPN, ExpressVPN.com/M. I literally said to someone on Friday, if I said to somebody, my birthday's May 27th, and they said, no, you're wrong. I looked it up. It's the 25th. I'd go, I'm pretty sure it's the 27th. Yeah. But they went, no. I looked up on the computer, and so did my friend Tim, and it's the 25th. Yeah. I'd walk away and go, I guess it's the 25th. If somebody says anything to me, that's what I'll do. I don't know what that wiring is, but that's how I...
You do know what that wiring is.
What is
you
it?
You do know. You do. You actually know. I looked
I
it
know.
Up. You know
you
what it is.
Up. Yeah,
you,
I wish
you
I knew.
Know what it is. You thought you didn't know, but you know what it is.
I had a thing. It was spawned from this conversation I had with a couple of my guys on Friday, where I said, "Hey, I got a big, like 12-foot A-frame ladder somewhere, like a big fiberglass A-frame ladder, which it's like a $300 item." You know, I said, "I got a big ladder somewhere, right?" And they said, "No," and I said, I thought I had one, and I had a guy go look under the porch because it used to be there, and it's like it wasn't there. And I said, is it at the shop? And they said, no. And I said, huh, I swear I had one. And he said, no. And I said, oh, okay, I guess I'll buy one. But I thought I had one, and they're like, nope. And I went, all right, I'm going to go buy one. And then the one guy said, There is a 12-foot A-frame ladder at the other shop. I brought it from the one shop to the other shop.
That's definitely not what I'm referring to.
Where I'm working. And I went, oh, no, I was talking about a giant A. I was like, I'm talking about a capital. Yes, that's what I'm saying.
And we don't work on Sesame Street.
All right, yeah, that one we got. But I knew I had one, but I was told I didn't. And I was confused, but that's all I had.
Right.
And I was going out to purchase this thing. Thank God this hero jumped in and meant that A-frame life. So I will, if somebody says it's Nipsey Russell,
so be it.
I believe them.
We'll be told either way, I'm sure.
I am sure. All right. So that was, I guess, based on Dag on Stern, is that just a wild coincidence?
No, that's what I heard. Dag was on Stern. Well, Chris came in and told us before
right.
the show.
All right. Yeah. So we got that. I have not heard it, but people keep saying, how come Dag's not on the show? And I don't know, because I talked to Mike August, I think it was like 3 days ago where I just said, have you hit up Dag? Like, what's going on? And he's like, he doesn't communicate.
And August said, sounds good.
But
can do.
He does. Dag is also very erratic. Mm. And also, as I've said, he's kind of nuts. And people are like, are you hating on Dag? He's like, I'm not really hating on him.
Dag.
He's a little nutty.
Yeah.
He's just a little nutty, which is fine. So what happens is you don't talk to him for like 3 years, and then you do talk to him. He got in some kind of feud with Dr. Drew. Does this sound familiar, Brian? Pissed at Dr. Drew for like a number of years. And Drew is such a fucking pussy. Drew would keep calling him, you know, like sending emails like, right. What have I done wrong? What have I done wrong? What's going on? I thought we were friends. And he just wouldn't. He wouldn't respond, and Drew was kind of freaking out, although I don't think Drew did anything, but he was still freaking out.
You ever heard of pussy? Try it!
And that was it.
So, yeah. And then at some point, I don't know if Dag said he was just pulling his chain or whatever it was, but Drew was sort of upset and was kind of prolonged. So I have no idea why Dag is not on this show or has been on this show, but he went on Stern, and evidently... We may have an answer as to why it's not on this show. Do we have it?
Yeah, here goes.
For a long time. Who's your best friend?
I have a couple.
But of course, only famous people we want to know about.
I don't hang out with famous people.
There's got to be one famous person who is your best friend. Jimmy Kimmel?
Well, Adam and I were quite close.
Adam Carolla?
Not anymore.
What happened?
Well, he's a right-wing troll now.
You've had a falling out.
I just can't hang out with him anymore.
Politics are ruining a lot
of
friendships. I know what you mean.
No.
Wow.
I can't.
Did you say it to him? Did you say Adam?
We've talked about it. I mean, I just can't do it.
You mean Adam calls you and you go, Adam?
We haven't talked in years.
Wow.
I haven't done his show in years. I just can't do it anymore.
Because of the politics.
Yeah, but, you know, go do your thing. I just don't want to be a part of it. It's not like, you know, we had a big fist fight, but no.
What do you mean? You don't want the wall?
No, I do not. I don't. No, I'm.
You don't think that's the answer to all our problems?
I really don't.
I really don't. I'm shocked by that.
Not a fan of Trump's. Didn't vote for him. But, you know, this is me. But yeah. I'll put it like this. I was online one time, and this guy was like, you suck. I used to be a fan. You used to be fucking funny. Stay out of politics. Shoot jokes. And my response was, we don't agree. But we can still be friends,
right.
But we don't agree. And the guy was like, no one ever said that to me. You guys, you should be like David. I mean, I guess they're not used to humanity.
So why can't
but
you
you're
and
not
Adam
doing
be friends?
That.
You're not doing that. You're not. You're not practicing what you preach.
No, fuck no. Do you practice what you preach?
Absolutely not.
Especially not on Twitter.
I'm a big phony. Yeah. All right. Well, that's very controversial. A big breakup between you and Adam Carolla.
Well, we wish him well.
We wish him well. No ill feeling, but right.
Well, go your own way.
Wow.
Yeah. I never did talk to him about anything, as far as I know.
Would you like to talk to him now?
Yeah.
Hey, yeah. Adam.
Mm. Yeah, Dagaroni.
I start playing random drops this morning.
Big ups to Robin.
Oh, shit!
Robin calling him out on that.
Well, it's...
You don't do that.
Well, it is weird to say we'll just agree to disagree and we can still be friends moments after you said we don't talk. Adam and I don't. We're not friends anymore. Slightly disingenuous.
So would that prompt you in any way to reach out and be like, hey, man, what's up? Or now you got your answer and we all move on.
David Allen Wayans?
No, I don't. I never really feel. Here's how I go through life. I assess from a distance out of my own body whether I did right or I did wrong, or I did somebody right or wrong, or I owe them an apology, or I owe them a conversation, or I owe them a something, and I assess it. And I'm, because of my bizarre childhood, I'm able to sort of stand next to me and assess me and my actions. Now, everyone thinks that's what they do.
Right.
That's what everyone thinks they do. And then you could say, well, that then you then are included in that group of people who think they do something they don't do.
Everyone's good lawyers for themselves and judges for everybody else.
Yeah, you watch enough of the Real Housewives of...
Well put.
Thank you.
You watch enough Real Housewives of anything, and they all think they're the fair-minded, you know, even-keeled...
How much is enough of Housewives?
Even is keeled ones, and they're all, all crazy and nuts and see things completely their own way. But I think that I am pretty good at going, well, what did I do? What did I do to whomever? Did I do anything to David Alan Greer directly? Did I say anything directly to him? Have we talked? When have I not been generous with him or magnanimous or invited him to do whatever it is I was doing? And I think I've always attempted to be a part of his life. And, it, you know, like if he was doing, when we were doing Crank Anchors, I was like, oh, we got to get David Alan Greer on Crank Anchors. When there was a Super Bowl party, I was like, we got to invite David Alan Greer to Super Party. When I found out he would go to like the Moto GT at Laguna Seca and watch the bikes, I'd be like, you should come to Laguna Seca for the weekend, for the car show and stuff. So I've never been overly generous, but I've always been very friendly and never had any ill will or any situation.
You've always attempted to include.
Yeah, and he's always been welcome on the show. I guess at a certain point, if you go hard enough and become like what he said, like a right-wing troll, like maybe at a certain point, if you're on Twitter and you're going, we shouldn't be celebrating Martin Luther King's birthday. That's bullshit. Like, if you did that, then you'd go, all right, well, you're not directly reaching out to him, but maybe you're indirectly reaching out to him. So I suppose you could weigh that in, like, go, well, let's see, what have you done in that department? My views have always been super consistent in family, dad, stay around, raise kids, get to work. Everything's going to work out pretty good for the black community. Some people look at that as racist, but I don't know. I sort of look at the data, and I have the same it's funny. Somebody said to me, like, well, of course, I think it was online over the weekend, but they're like, of course, you think your opinions are right, but, like, how can you speak for the LGBT community, and how can you speak for the black community, and how can you speak for women and trans community? And I was like, just like a certified trainer says diet and exercise. Like, I don't ask if you're gay, if the client's gay or if they're black or Hispanic. I just go diet and exercise. I would argue this
change your diet slightly.
Sort of the opposite of racism, which is like, I just have a set of rules, which is get to work, raise your kids, get educated. In terms of our society, well, actually any society, there's just a way to become successful. It's like, don't have kids, get married later, have kids later, get your career going, stay in school, dad, stick around, raise kids. All stuff I've always been pretty consistent about. But I guess you could look at that as some form. Well, I guess now that's a kind of a racist statement, although it never used to be. And also, Loveline was exclusively white people calling. We never, I don't know what the demo was, but I mean.
For the most part, yeah.
It was over 90%, right?
Well, it's the kind of stations that was carried on, you know, the K-Rocks of the world. how to, you know,
yeah,
demo.
Well,
what do you
whatever,
say, Brian?
No, what, for
white
whatever,
people don't care,
whatever reason, for whatever reason, it was well over 90% white listening and well over 90% phoning in. Mm. I mean, well over.
Yeah,
accurate.
I'd say so. Yeah,
okay.
Certainly for the phone-ins. I can't say for the listeners. It's the same. Yeah, certainly for people I talk to for several years.
Yes, and probably listening as well. So I gave them the same advice I would give anybody from any community, which is stop having the kids so young. Dads raise the kids. Focus on your education. This is the exact same thing for a decade talking to white people.
Don't get pregnant, I'm making air quotes, was sort of the de facto sign off for most of the people that called in. Like, all right, good talking to you. Don't get pregnant.
Right. Whitey.
Yeah.
But
just, you know, the people, you know, who
but
are
like the nutritionist,
or,
the same thing applies.
Easy on the carbs.
It just applies to all groups. So that was kind of my approach. But I don't think... the right-wing trolls are weird. It's kind of weird, but okay. But so in terms of DAG, so I guess I could reach out to him and attempt to fix things.
This counts.
But.
This is good enough.
Well, maybe not this part.
Don't burn any extra calories.
But I don't know. I don't feel like I need to reach out to him and try to fix things because I don't feel like I broke things. Yeah. I've always been around and open to having him on and socializing and doing whatever may be. So
your guys' relationship, you just kind of faded away. Nothing in particular had you guys say, we're done.
I don't think it was an incident.
I never talked to him. I never had anything. But again, I don't always know. Like sometimes people... There are times when there's an incident in somebody's head, but it's not in your head.
It gets a little stuck in there.
Anyone who's been married will probably can tell you that there are many incidents that you're totally unaware of. And so maybe there is an incident, but none that I'm aware of or none that I was present for.
Let's get him on to talk about it.
That'd be great.
I remember you guys spent a lot of time. I say a lot of time, but you guys spent like a good 24 hours together when you were doing Road Hard. And, you know, he was around all day for that. And, I mean, he seemed fine for that. And then he came on to promote Road Hard. He came to all the press events and everything. I don't know if there's anything in there that you remember any sort of animosity or...
Well, no. I think what has happened is Trump got elected and there's two sides of this world now, which is you have to be completely outraged that he's the president and being going nuts on him, or... There's my side, which is I get to fuck on with my life and we'll see what happens in 2 years. And if you're on that side where you're like not actively campaigning, then if you're not part of the resistance, then you're part of the occupying force.
Yeah, it's a tacit endorsement, I guess. It could be seen as that. You know what I mean? Like if you're not resisting, you're just kind of allowing.
Not going out of your way to condemn.
Yeah. Right. So I'm not. And so that then gets me into the... group who's occupying Poland, except for I'm not in the army.
Ooh.
I'm not in the army. I'm a citizen, and I'm not picking up a pitchfork.
You were just following orders.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm not heading down to the White House, but I don't really care. And I've been on the record many times by saying nobody's going to change your life. Presidents are going to come and go. Politicians are going to come and go. I don't like many of them, but they're not going to change your life. Your job is to focus on your little constituency, which is your family, your neighborhood, your community. Stay the course there. Feels like an insane distraction to get pulled away from what that is. Now, if you think... If you really think that the president, in this case Trump or whomever becomes president or whatever, is basically doing what Hitler did in Poland in 1939, then you should go out and do it. I don't think that.
Yeah.
I'm not an alarmist in any facet of this stuff. So that's my thing. I go to work and pay my taxes.
Well, that's what I find kind of interesting about this because, I mean, for the years I've been here, all the time, the three of us think very differently. A lot of times Brian and I are on the same page and we're, you know, we're kind of hashing out and trying to figure it out. And if I was just in my little world with, you know, my liberal friends or whatever all the time, I would have no reason to expand my horizons. I'd have no reason to be more flexible mentally when it comes to these kinds of conversations. And because I'm here every day, I have a much broader point of view than I would have if I didn't have this type of opportunity.
You understand right-wing trolls now a little
right.
more.
Right. I'm yeah. inside the head of the psychopath.
That's right.
No, but it has made a huge difference in not only in how I think, but how I communicate with people who I agree with and who I disagree with. So who wouldn't want to have that conversation?
Yeah, well, I don't know. A lot of people don't want to have that conversation. I don't get it. This sort of notion of like, well, you can't tolerate people that think different. Well, here's part of the problem, I think. It's not people who think differently than you about subjects. It's, you know, we talked about school choice. I'm for school choice. Now, if I'm just for school choice and you're pro LA Unified, then that's fine. You have a position, I have a position. And there's no reason why we can't be friends. I think differently. I want competition. I want these startup schools. But that's also, it's sort of statistically based on truths, which is your system not been working out so well. Mm-hmm. I'd like to try something else that does seem to have a better batting average, but fine. You're pro LA Unified and I'm pro school choice. That's fine. But when you label me anti-kid, now
Adam Carolla,
I'm a bad person,
right.
And now we don't need to be friends. So I'm no longer school choice. I'm against
right.
kids and against teachers. Mm-hmm. And the guys against kids and against teachers, well, then no reason to ever be friends with that guy.
Right.
He's anti-whatever. And when I'm explaining that I want kids to eat breakfast because I want their parents to make the breakfast because I don't want them pulled into the system and
racist.
Eating the slop.
Easy right
and
control.
You do the anti-children mm-hmm. and thinks kids should go hungry. Well, then you shouldn't be friends with somebody who thinks kids should go yeah. hungry. Mm-hmm. That's a bad
person. It's a reasonable position to hold.
If you said, I'm a dog trainer and I will train the dog and I'll discipline the dog or whatever, I'd go, oh, okay. And if you, and now, not me, not my dog, not Phil. He does whatever Phil wants. That's how we set it up. But if I turn what you did into canine abuse, well, then I wouldn't be friends with someone who abused dogs.
Right.
Is Dag the dog here, or is he the dog trainer? I'm trying to set the record straight. I don't want to get you in deeper trouble.
All right. So I think a lot of what's going on is, turn the people you disagree with into bad people. Hang that label of whatever, sexist, xenophobic, whatever it is, start anti-gay or like anti-whatever. Start hanging all that on everybody. And then why would yeah. you be friends with someone? Would you be friends with someone who was anti-gay?
Brian, just, answer
I'm
carefully.
Anti-gay.
Well, are we friends?
Yeah.
Before I answer the question.
Anti-gay. So I wouldn't be friends with someone who is anti-gay or anti-black or anti-anything. Why would you be friends with that person?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bad person.
Yeah.
All right. Or someone who abused their dog or their kids or wanted kids to go hungry.
It's a little easy. It lets you off the hook pretty good to just label that person and then be able to walk away. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think because what you'd have to do is you'd have to get your ducks in order and put together a good, coherent argument as to why just LA Unified is a better idea than having school choice, which is it's more work.
It's a little more nuanced.
I don't know.
A little complicated.
I don't know. I don't know that it's even doable but statistically, but it's certainly a lot more work on your half.
Then call
to
me
have,
a kid hater.
But just say you hate kids, and then you get to move on with your arm raised in victory.
Well, come back, Dag.
Yeah. We'd like him to come back.
I think that's what we're saying.
I think that's what we're saying. That's right. All right. Or maybe, oh, Jesus. Mm-hmm. Come on, after Trump leaves or something. I don't know.
According to Tom Arnold, that's going to be next week.
Oh, yeah. Tom Arnold and Rosie. We should find out who's going to win the Super Bowl from those two. They're like, he's going down any day now. All right, let me tell you about Craftsman and Lowe's, the new home of Craftsman, including their new V20 cordless power tool lineup. One battery system works on multiple products, 2, 4, 6, and 8 tool combo kits available, all with the 2-amp high-capacity lithium battery that works with all the tools in their V20 lineup. Runtime you need, the power you deserve. V20 brushless tools available. They have the Max brushless drill. They have the Max impact driver. They have the Max hammer drill. Let's not forget about that. Doing a little masonry work, but the impact drill, man, that thing will sink those big timber screws all day long. Proudly made in the U.S. of A with Global Materials in Charlotte, North Carolina. For the latest in Craftsman products updates, you can visit Lowe's.com/Adam. Lowe's.com/Adam. Lowe's, the new home of Craftsman tools. All right, we have the lowdown on the Edge Fest from Korn. Is that on my
right here?
Oh, I have it in front of me.
Under, right here.
Oh, under. I just buried it. So the way I kind of met the band Korn is I was on. We did Edge Fest. What was that station? Is it written on here?
KXXR.
Oh, okay.
The DC.
No.
Where's that?
That's Minneapolis. Put on the thing next time, fellas. Thanks, because that's information that could come up. Yeah. Edgefest was the name of their KXX. What is it?
R. KXXR.
Yeah. We were on Loveline was heavily syndicated. That was one of our affiliates.
A lot of white folk.
A lot of white folk.
A lot of honkies.
Well, if you like the... By the way, here are the bands. Iggy Pop, Korn, Filter, Everclear, Flip. I don't remember.
I remember Flip.
Goldfinger, Gravity Kills, and No Doubt. So a lot of white faces out there in that audience.
Not super diverse.
Or
female singers.
Float Right Park in Wisconsin is where this thing was. Just a big park. And there must have been, 15,000 people at this thing, 10,000, 15. That was a huge event. And they thought it'd be a good idea to bring me out from Loveline, because Loveline was such a big hit on their station. And so they brought me out, and they brought me out to do like stage announcements. Mm-hmm. So I was going to walk back and forth and bring Iggy Pop out, and bring Korn out, and Filter, and Flip. What was Flip? Anyway,
be a local band.
I kept and by the way, this is 1996. Like, No Doubt was not the biggest band on this.
Probably one
lineup.
Album at that point.
Hmm?
Probably had one album at that point.
Yeah, well, they had one album, and the album came out and sort of sat around for like a year before it really caught fire. So, Iggy Pop is written in the bolt. We're looking at the flyer.
He's
Iggy
the festival
Pop,
headliner. And, at that point,
Garbage, Candlebox.
Oh, Garbage, sweet.
Yeah.
Oh.
Shirley Manson.
Where are those? Huh?
No? We just found this poster that we're putting up, so.
Oh, okay. Candlebox, Garbage. I like Garbage.
Me too.
Garbage was a great band.
I agree. Not enough Garbage played in my mind. All right, so now.
Same producer as Nirvana, Butch Vig. That's why it sounded so good.
Oh, what? Really? Yeah.
It was his band.
Yeah, Love and Rockets. You guys read that and tell me what's on there
if you can find it. Iggy Pop, Filter, Everclear, Garbage, Korn, something kills. What is it?
It's a
Smoking Kills. Oh,
Gravity Kills.
Right.
Sorry, Dawson. I thought it was your band.
Yeah,
No
bands.
Doubt, Goldfinger, Flip, Two Piece, Polara, Patty Rothberg.
I don't know that one.
So I was there.
A lot of big bands.
Oh, and Love and Rockets you mentioned, I guess. I was there, and I was just going to bring... They flew me out, and I flew out of LAX with Korn, and I just remember getting on the plane kind of going, "This guys must be in a rock band." Like, they look like they're in a rock band. I wasn't sure. I didn't talk on the flight or anything. I was just like, those guys are in a rock band. And then when I got there, every time I went out on stage, the audience would start shouting for Korn. But I was bringing out Candlebox or Everclear or anybody.
Korndlebox.
Yeah, like they would start shouting, Korn, we want Korn, and bring Korn out. Like, Korn was coming out in like 8 bands.
Sit tight.
Yeah. And I was like, okay. Now, but I got to bring out Flip or Goldfinger or something. And I was... So they kept yelling Korn, and then I would like yell Korn, and they'd go Korn, you know, Korn, and then I'd bring out Goldfinger, which I felt horrible for. But the crowd was going nuts, yelling for Korn. And then at some point after that event, I then became sort of associated with the band because I was the one who was out on the stage right. yelling Korn, and they were yelling Korn, and everyone was yelling Korn. And at some point, I was traveling around with them. We're going up to the Bay Area. And Max Pat, do you ever find out any information on that?
No, we looked it up all morning. We couldn't find anything.
All morning?
Well, almost since you told me about it.
Yeah, with 18 minutes before the show started.
Well, I figured you'd do that, man.
Jim, well, it was Jim Rose.
Yeah.
It was Jim Rose's sideshow. I've right. talked about it before.
Mm-hmm.
It was an event in like the Bay Area, or maybe it was like Fresno or something, Sacramento or something like that.
Right.
And it was like a record store thing, and there was a lawsuit, but I don't remember. That must have been in like 97 or something, because he'd like get out there and do like puppetry of the penis, and I guess one of the 14-year-olds in the crowd was like not impressed.
Not into it.
Not into it.
Yeah, we tried to find any scandals or any sort of controversy with the sideshow.
A little too into it.
Yeah, that's a weird place.
Do you remember that Korn was, from my recollection, was featured on a Man Show bit where you and Jimmy were in the band or were musicians before the Man Show? There was some fake history or something like
oh,
that?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I do. They were playing...
And you were playing like the banjo or something?
They were playing... Well, you can play. They were playing the Forum, I think, out here. And so I was like friendly with the guys in Korn. I was like, let's do a behind the music... Korn.
That was it.
Yeah, sorry, we'll play it for you.
Korn. Their legion of fans know them as hard-edged rock music visionaries. But what they don't know is this seemingly invincible band was nearly torn apart by the two members who helped bring them together. Tonight, Korn. The story beneath the music. Our story begins with Adam Carolla and Jimmy Kimmel,
wow.
two wide-eyed, idealistic sophomores from Bakersfield High.
Believe it or not, when we were in high school, we didn't get a lot of girls.
It's true. I can't explain it, but we didn't.
No. And there were these guys in school, and they had a band, and, you know, we figured if we got in the band, it'd be good for the chicks. You know, they'd flock to us like mice on...
Tuna.
On Tuna, yeah.
The guys in the band, they were huge fans of our music.
I guess they knew we had something special to contribute.
Adam's dad had a van, and we had a lot of equipment to carry. And Jimmy? Well, Jimmy
played plays a clarinet.
We were pretty high.
Actual pictures.
But the combination of the band's talent and Adam's dad letting them use his van worked. They started small, high school dances, pep rallies, bar mitzvahs, and eventually grew to concert halls, arenas, and bar mitzvahs. Together, they took the music industry by storm. Rock radio caught on, and soon sold-out concerts turned into massive hit singles, millions of albums, and thousands of adoring fans. But Adam, and especially Jimmy, did not handle success well.
We wrote the song Freak on a Leash one night after Jimmy, well... Let's just say he was tripping pretty hard.
Either he was on drugs or he ate some
full
of bologna or something. I'm not sure, but he was out of it.
He thought he was a dog.
He was running around the dressing room, biting people, humping legs.
Cut,
I mean,
actual footage.
All kinds of crazy shit. It was just too much. And then he started peeing.
Oh, God.
Not just in his pants, everywhere, the dressing room. And that was the end of it. That was like...
Adam's the only one laughing.
The band tried to keep their problems private, but somehow the news leaked.
I called this press conference tonight to announce that Jimmy peed all over the rest of the band. Any questions?
The media had a field day.
You're in
On
trouble.
October 22nd, 1995, Korn decided to part ways with Carolla and Kimmel forever.
Adam's dad sold van, and I think we knew it was time to end it.
We left them.
We had a lot of new ideas, and quite frankly, those guys were holding us back.
Corolla Kimmel Mombazo.
While Korn went on to become one of the world's most popular bands, Adam and Jimmy quickly sank into cable television obscurity.
I don't know whatever happened to those guys. Last I heard, they were doing some show about farting.
Carolla and Kimmel, Korn's forgotten foot soldiers, faded from the public's memory, but a part of rock and roll history forever.
Smash my banjo.
You guys go way back.
That's good. That's
I know.
Real good.
They're doing a show about farting.
That's good.
Oh, I forgot about that bit. God. We used to spend a lot of time on those bits, man. Like, we were like, I think we were doing sound check with Korn, and they were like doing the forum or something. We spent all fucking day at the forum, and then we'd have to go like build another stage and a set and a thing. I mean, there were like a lot of calories burnt for like 3 minute videos. Like,
it's worth
shoot
it. It's
those
so
over
good.
Multiple days. Yeah, I love them. I love that they hold up. I love that they're funny. And I also, like, whenever someone is like, oh, man show, girls on, that's what you guys did.
We're the juggies.
You made fun of girls. Like, you made fun of girls. It's like, no, we'd make fun of, we made fun of ourselves. The show wouldn't work if we just made fun of somebody. And every man show bit, we lost.
Mm-hmm. You're the foil.
We lost every single bit. We were always the losers in the bit because we always knew it. That's how it would be funny.
Right.
It's not going to work if you get the girl or you get the band or you get the whatever. And that was just one of the many bits where we became losers. It's weird that people don't understand that about comedy.
Well, and after the wild success of like Archie Bunker and what Carol O'Connor, you think you'd understand that kind of foil, but no.
No, I know. He was the one everyone made fun of in that show. All right. Let's see. Jordan Harbinger's on line five. We have an intro for
give
him.
Me a second.
All right.
It's ready to go.
All right. Jordan.
Hey.
Hey, man.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm interested in, I don't know. I don't know if it's the zeitgeist or my age or whatever it is, but I'm interested in getting better. I'd like, maybe it's the maybe it's getting old and being an atheist or something. I just feel like I'd like some life hacks. I'd like some tips. I'd like to know. Go ahead, Brian, if you got that.
And now, some simple ways to better yourself in 2019. Brought to you by Intuit.com. Intuit, proud makers of TurboTax, QuickBooks, and Mint. It's time for Harbinger of Success with Jordan Harbinger.
And I do know that's something you're passionate about as well. So your first topic is surrounding yourself with the right people.
Yeah, a lot of people have just sort of busted this cliche out. There's this business leader who's since passed named Jim Rohn, and he said something along the lines of, you're the average of the five people with whom you spend the most time. And a lot of us, it seems lost on us, right? We'll hang out with our deadbeat roommate who plays video games all day and is, you know, still, quote-unquote, looking for work. And then we'll go out on a couple dates with the people that we scrape off the bottom of our Tinder shoe. And then we get to work and we're like, oh, why aren't I getting these promotions? Why am I getting passed up for this? And people don't realize that you really can make or break your success in your career and in the rest of your life by surrounding yourself with the right people or the wrong people.
Well, and this is, let me interrupt for a quick second here. I got to this sort of fork in the road. It should be a pickle fork, right? Cause
yeah, it's more of a skewer.
They say like fork in the road, but it's gotta be the pickle fork. Cause it can't be a fork. Cause the fork's got, you could keep going straight.
Tuning fork, I think, is
tuning the, fork in the road.
That makes more sense.
The pickle fork as well.
That's right.
Look at the front of a boat that's a pickle fork. Sure. It's got the two spots inside. Anyway, sorry. So Jordan, I looked around and I remember like thinking when I was like 27, like all my loser buddies I went to high school with, it's not working. And I need to go get around people that are more successful. Unfortunately, that is humbling because you're then, by proxy unsuccessful. Yeah.
And they want nothing to do with you.
Right. And I remember clearly my buddies going, well, fuck that. I'm going to be the king of the losers. Mm-hmm. And it, they didn't want to deal with it emotionally. Like, it, you do have to emotionally deal with people
yourself.
That they drive better cars. Yeah. They have their shit together. They pull out credit cards and that are not secured from the Bank of Hoven and things of that nature.
Bank accounts with a plus number on them.
Right. You have to kind of deal with it. But it's a good thing. I think a lot of I think it's volitional with a lot of people. Like, they like to be the king of the losers versus lower middle pack of successful people.
Feels better.
Right.
You know what? You're absolutely right. There's a lot of temptation in becoming, like you said, the king of the losers. In fact, this is sort of contradictory to some of the point, or maybe a weird fit, not necessarily contradictory. We've seen happiness studies that show, and I think I talked about this with you and Drew at some point, that we're actually happier if we live in a lower middle class neighborhood and we're the guy with the so-called fancy car and the house that's slightly bigger and we can afford to wear our, you know, Levi's 501 blues instead of shopping on clearance. We're actually happier that way being around those types of folks. The problem is, in absolute terms, we're still sort of reverting down to the lowest common denominator of the people, or the average, I should say, of the people that we're around. So you have to make this weird choice. Do you want to be a little bit happier being around people that you can go, yep, I'm better than them in all these different categories, or do you want to be getting better yourself? You kind of can't do both.
Also, in terms of people you surround yourself with, you know, there's this sort of misnomer where people are like, some people will tweet me and they'll go, oh, well, if you didn't meet Jimmy Kimmel, blah, 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 blah.
You're still being corn.
And I go, that's right. And I go, well, what do you mean meet Jimmy Kimmel? Jimmy Kimmel's probably met 200,000 people. It's not enough to meet somebody. They want to collaborate with you and work with you and be a part of your life and help you. And you, in turn, need to help them. Like, you can't just meet. It's a weird thing where people go, you just meet. Like, you can meet the Pope. Right. It doesn't mean you're in the Vatican. It just means you met him. Like,
but Tommy Mottola met a lot of people, but he found Mariah Carey for a different reason.
So to dismiss is like, if you didn't meet this person, everyone's met everyone, and Jimmy's met lots of people, and lots of people met lots of people.
And back it up a step, Jimmy, at the time, was on one of the biggest morning shows in the nation. He didn't have a lot to gain from befriending and mentoring or whatever, working with the construction guy or a boxing coach. It was like, hey, there had to be something, you know, meeting someone. You meet a lot of people, actually convincing them, like, oh, no, we should work together or develop something, or I have something to offer you, or we could, you know, benefit from this.
Well, also, you know, maybe this doesn't hold true for Dag, but I'm going to see him on Super Bowl Sunday, and we'll be hanging out, drinking beers, and that'll be 25 years on. So the notion of, like, you just meet somebody, well, also, how do you know him for...
And you could.
How do you know him for 25 years? You have to cultivate. Yeah, like, right. It's a job. It's a plant. It needs to be watered, occasionally fertilized. But this notion of, like, who you meet, like, it's not who you meet. It's what you strike up after you meet, and does it keep going year after year after year? Sorry, Jordan.
No, that makes sense, and that actually reinforces the point I'm about to make here, which is that. Your ability that you have, of course, you have to deserve to be in that company. And you kind of brought up, like, oh, crap, what happens if you're then the low man on the totem pole? Actually, what we've seen is that potential counts. And what I mean by that is, let's say you meet somebody who's a doctor, but you're only in medical school and you're a first year med student. We know that psychologically people will say this person is on the level because the potential that they're showing right now is good enough. And so what you probably had when you met Jimmy Kimmel was he didn't go, look at this poor sap that I'm just hanging out with. You know, he saw you're doing the work, you're putting in the time. He liked other elements that you had around you. Just like you're working with people in your current endeavors, you're not thinking like, oh, everybody is on the same level. You're looking at what people can become. And we do this subconsciously. You don't have to worry about it too much. It's that potential counts. So if, just because you're not at the same level as somebody who you want to be around doesn't really make a difference. We're all going to be evaluating based on where we think that person might be in a certain number of years or throughout their life. So you don't have to kind of finagle your way through or BS where you're at, that can obviously blow up in your face.
The I want to skip the next one and hop right to not accepting responsibility because it's not directly theirs to deal with. And I want you to think about that for a second because I went out to dinner with Kevin Hench a couple days ago. And
talk shit in an Uber.
That guy that guy is got Last Man Standing, and then he's got this Gabriel Iglesias thing going on Netflix. It's going to be huge, and he's going to have two huge sitcoms, one on Fox and one on – what is it? Yeah, it's on Fox now. Mm-hmm. One's on network, and the other will be on Netflix, and he's going to position himself to be like the Chuck Lorre of 2020.
Awesome.
And every time I talk to him, he just tells me a new book he read and a new thing about the mind and its success. And he's not reading like how to get successful books. He's reading books about the human mind and how it works and some of its neurobiology and things like that. But he brought the book with him. And he,
Adam, this is a book.
Yes. And I squat. I said, why? The roach is in this place? And I started swinging it at the table violently. Violently. It almost opened at some point. I almost saw a word. I know. I got tape it shut. So I said, that's why you use a slipper. But anyway, he said, you can't read a slipper. I said, okay.
Exactly.
So he brings a book. He opens a book. He starts talking about, in the book, starts talking about internalization. Internalization and how insanely important that is, how insanely important that is to people's success, groups, individuals, whatever. And I thought, that's so weird because it's all I've been thinking about for like the last 10 years is internalize it, take it in and fix it. Stop pushing it. Stop pushing it out there and externalizing. And as he was telling me about that, I was like, I think that's the only real, I really think that's the only obstacle to success. And everyone I know, either you internalize or you externalize. And if you externalize, God help you and whoever you live with. Sorry, Jordan Harbinger.
Yeah, of course. One thing that I will say about this, a lot of people will go, you know, I'm fine. I'm going to choose the happiness version where I'm the king of the nerds or the king of the losers or whatever we phrase it as. But we also find that, and this is particularly depressing, so you're welcome, everybody, there are network effects of bad habits. And what this means is, if I'm hanging out with Adam and Brian and Gina, and you guys, one of you guys has a roommate, and his friends, the roommate's friends, are overweight, and they all smoke, and they all have all these issues, the network effect is, and they're still trying to figure out the exact causation here, we will actually have unhealthier habits on average based on friend-of-friend connections, which is really kind of depressing because who doesn't know somebody that they hang out with that also has kind of bum friends? And that's really tough.
Well,
those people's negative habits affect us somehow.
The thing that's funny, and it'll tie right into this nicely, I love a baked potato.
Hold on, guys. It's coming around.
Sure ties in.
Coming around. And when I'm going to Morton's, I always get the huge, they have a huge baked potato, and then they just come by.
Is it twice baked?
They come and slop on all the sour cream and the butter and the chives and the
baked
potato. And so my normal move, if I'm there with anybody but Kevin Hench, I love it when you get the meat and you start cutting the meat and there's a little blood and the juice and whatever. And then you take a chunk of the potato and you sort of sop it up in the meat juice.
Okay.
You know, take
for.
A bite. I love it. But after Kevin Hench tells the guy at Morton's, take the onion basket bread thing that they bring to your table. It's like hit the road with it.
Wow.
I will never order the potato in front of him. A, I know he ain't splitting it. B, I know he ain't down with it. And I'm like sitting there like thinking about it on the way in. Like, I'm an adult man. I could order a potato if I want a potato.
Man.
I'll tell him that I can eat a potato because I haven't had potatoes in a week. Here's what I'll tell them.
You're whipping up your justifications.
I'll get Tom Brady's wristband and I'll have a bunch of potato excuses on it. And then I think, just do without. And then we don't order the potato. Never. Now, if I was there with Lynette or anybody else, I would for sure order the potato and look forward to ordering the
potato.
Through
gritted teeth, you're like, steamed broccoli, please.
Yes. Well, it's peer pressure.
Yeah.
And he's the guy explaining to me while I'm thinking about the potato. He's saying to me, when I was 26, I weighed 165 pounds and I benched 265. And that was pretty fucking good. And my goal for this year is to be able to bench 265 again. And I'm like, what's that have to do with four camera sitcoms with Gabriel Iglesias? And
you got, you got some potato on your lip.
Yeah, I'm thinking, what does that have to do with writing multicam sitcoms? And it doesn't, but it does.
Yeah, everything.
It's part of the overall.
His
making
his,
that his goal. So I'm not going to order potato in front of that guy. But if he,
like
lit,
a loser.
If he lit up a cigarette and said, who wants some Pringles? I'd say, I want them both. Sorry, Jordan.
No, it makes sense. And sort of the analogy here is the guy whose wife is pregnant, right? And he's like, oh, I'm gaining weight because I'm eating with my wife. My wife is eating all this more than usual because she's pregnant. The network effect is maybe it's your wife's friend who's pregnant. So when she hangs out with her, she's eating a little more and you're hanging out with your wife and now you're eating a little more and you're like, what's going on? You don't know or care that your wife's friend is pregnant and yet you're the one gaining weight. So the network effect is pretty insidious when it comes to this one. That's why it's such a potent force. And what we have to do to counteract all this is make sure pretty consistently and definitely consciously that we're making sure we're being social or being around people that make us better and reinforce good habits and actively limiting our time, not necessarily cutting out of our lives because we don't have to choose friends based on their habits exclusively, but we've got to make sure we limit our time with friends who are reinforcing bad habits. If you're spending every Friday with the guy who plays Xbox and is unemployed, don't be surprised when the network effects rub off on you. If you're spending one day every other month with that guy, you're probably okay.
Jordan, we'll wrap it up here. The Jordan Harbinger Show, the podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One as well. Thanks, Jordan. I always appreciate the insight.
Thanks. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Harbinger of Success, brought to you by Intuit.com.
Do you put something on the screen, Max Pat, about DAG? What was that Super Bowl?
Oh, because so, you mentioned that Jimmy's coming to your Super Bowl. Well, right after him talking about you on Stern, he mentions Jimmy and says, I got to call Jimmy up and ask him about to go to a Super Bowl party. He throws the best Super Bowl parties. I've been to one of them, and it was Matt Damon was there, and I had such a good time. So he's like talking about how he needs to call Jimmy to ask him to go to a Super Bowl party.
Aha!
Yeah.
All right. Well, he can come in. If just come in through the back entrance. That shouldn't be a problem. You know me.
When you're done parking the cars, come on in.
That's
go
right.
To the second half.
All right, let me tell you about Intuit. Whether you're a small business owner, mother, or podcast host, we're all working toward a prosperous future. Prosperity doesn't mean the same thing to everyone. Maybe it's buying a home, maybe it's starting a college fund, or finally taking that trip to Hawaii. All you think about it, and you think about your vision of prosperity. Probably worry about time, you worry about money, you worry about obstacles. Intuit is here to give you the confidence to pursue your goals. Join the millions who manage your finances with QuickBooks, TurboTax, or Mint. Everyone deserves a chance to prosper. Get started on your path to success and do it today, man. Learn more at Intuit.com. That is Intuit.com. Intuit.com, powering prosperity. It is Intuit.com. All right, let's see. Connecticut coming up, Foxwoods. We'll do Adam Carolla's Unprepared. I think we have a young ball lady. Stupid, Mike. Stupid. Boston Wilbur Theater's the next day. That's February 9th. Carolla's Unprepared. And we'll tell you more about that coming up. But tickets available. We'll be hanging out afterward, signing autographs. And our big show coming up at the Peterson Automotive Museum, the 10th anniversary ACS. That'll be March 10th. And Kimmel will be there at night. Leno will be there during the day for the car portion of the show. And come on out and say hi. Yes.
I asked August what time the show was. He said, yep.
Sure can.
So I'll be there, dude.
the guy. There's a Corolla drink Super Bowl party at Burbank Hooters.
What? Oh,
that's coming up this Sunday. Mangria girls are going to be pouring Mangria cocktails.
Dude, balls.
So check that out. All right. Let's see. So we got Monkey from Korn coming in here. We'll talk about Korn. We'll talk about this new doc, Mind Over Matter. Talk about it's a very inspirational doc about cerebral palsy and Monkey. And our guy Nate Adams made it at the other shop, makes all our docs. We'll do that right after this.
The Corolla Drinks Wine Club is back, offering you the best deals on 3, 6, and 12 packs of Mangria. Aside from discounts on each and every bottle, with a 3-pack, you'll get a custom actual chicken shit ticket signed by the Ace Man himself. With a 6-pack, you'll get the signed ticket, plus an exclusive shirt with every shipment only available to Wine Club members. We'll kick it off with the Ace Man's definitive taco rankings t-shirt designed by Corolla on paper. And with the 12-pack, you'll get the ticket, 3 custom shirts, plus a special invitation for you and a guest to the Corolla Family Summer Barbecue, held at our studio and hosted by Lynette and Adam. You'll eat incredible food, meet Adam, Brian, Gina, myself, and the lackeys, and get a tour of the ACS studio. Plus, you'll get to see each and every one of Ace's cars, including the magical 935. It all goes down June 22nd and is only for you beautiful 12-pack members. So head to CorollaDrinks.com and pick your tier today.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla. You may know him from putting his body on the line in Jackass, but now Johnny Knoxville is bringing you the wildest stories from the bravest folks he knows on his newest podcast, Pretty Sure I Can Fly. With his co-host, Elna Baker, they have incredible firsthand accounts from folks who surfed 100-foot waves, ride 600 miles per hour in a rocket sled, and wrestle crocodiles just for fun. They've been talking with brave souls who throw caution to the wind and push the boundaries of what humans are capable of. Or, as Johnny would say, they're talking to people who have more balls than a bowling alley. I'm Pretty Sure I Can Fly. Johnny and Elna bring you personal stories from unsung heroes that are part comedy, part adrenaline, and all heart. These are the inspirational, hold my beer stories that will make you want to grab the bull by the horns, literally and figuratively. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly right now, early and free, right now on Wondery Plus.
And now, Alcoa presents Definitely Not a Jew on the Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Tallahassee, Florida. A 32-year-old man was arrested after he locked himself in the bathroom of Starbucks and set fire to his underwear! Definitely not a Jew!
Well, I want to thank Monkey from Korn coming in here. We go way back. 35 million records sold to Grammys.
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
That's God. A lot of records, man. I mean, when there were records.
Yeah. It's so weird. I mean, I guess it's like, can we even keep track of anything anymore? Because like the steroids in baseball, like how, what does the home run count mean anymore? It's all change. It's all,
thank you.
It's all different. Mind Over Matter is the name of the documentary. It's available on Amazon and iTunes and Google Play. It's produced by Nate Adams, the guy I make all my docs with. And it's very moving. It's very touching. It's about, young guy named Brandon with cerebral palsy and how basically you became an inspiration for him. Can you talk more about that?
I mean, we were just out on the road. We were touring and doing what we do and reaching. I started to notice, you know, we sort of a lot of fans would come up to us and say, hey, your music is touching me in a way that I feel like I belong someplace now. I feel like I have a, you know, and we're all like these kids from Bakersfield who always felt like these misfits and out of place. And we kind of still do when we do a lot of festivals and stuff. It's like, well, rock dudes with, you know, Adidas sweatpants. And we always kind of felt like these black sheep, you know? And I think that resonated with a lot of people, and it resonated with Brandon, and he sort of, you know, approached us and said, "Hey, I got a tattoo of you and Head on my back," and we're like, "Well, that's kind of fucking creepy," or you know. But then once we met him, and he said, "Oh, it's helped me so much. I wanted to play guitar," and we started to notice this shift in the way people were perceiving our music and just identifying with it and making them feel like they were part of something bigger or belong someplace, I guess.
Well, it's a really moving doc. And as you know, Nate only does good docs because he does docs with me. So turns out he doesn't need me. I was talking about us going out to Edge Fest in
Minneapolis.
Outside of Minneapolis, Wisconsin or whatever. And that's kind of how Korn first, like, that's when I realized there are all these huge bands there, and everyone's yelling for Korn every time I went out on stage.
Well, oh, you were announcing the show.
Yeah, I was announcing the show. Also, I do remember somebody threw a Jägermeister bottle at me.
That was me.
From the side.
Fuck you!
Hit me the side of the head.
You take one of those little traveler bottles, the glass ones.
Oh, yeah, that's a mini bar
you
one.
You chuck it from 50 rows back.
That's
that thing becomes a web. That's weaponized, man. That thing caught you at the bridge of the nose. It'd bust you open. But the thing that's always funny about those events is they're like, "Look, we're buying you a first-class ticket. We're putting you up at a hotel. We're going to use the shit out of you." Mm. But what they don't really realize is the first time you walk out on stage, you go, "It's Adam Carolla from Loveline." Everyone goes nuts. But the 11th time, everyone's like, "Get the fuck off stage."
Bring
like,
on the band.
They don't even want to see you. Like, the bloom is
off the rose.
You're
just a target at that point.
For a Jägermeister bottle. So I'm trying to think, Korn must have gone on late in the set because they were yelling for Korn every time I walked out there, and you guys, it was never to be. Like, you guys were happening. I don't know. Do you remember? Do you have thoughts?
No, we were probably still at the hotel partying, and you're getting Jägermeister bottles thrown at you. And
it was like a big field, I remember.
I think it was a festival, and you know what? I think is the one up in Oshkosh in that area.
Probably.
Edge Fest is like the only thing out there is like a cement stage.
Right.
I think that was it.
And they put some trailers and stuff behind it.
Oh, yeah.
And in front of it's just a sea of humanity.
Yeah, I think
screaming
this is the one.
For Korn. But that was, I guess, 96. And I guess that's when Korn just completely hit.
Yeah. That was right in between our second, third record. We had just, I think, finished doing Follow the Leader album.
Mm,
which had, Got the Life on it, Freak on a Leash. Some other ones. I don't know. I made a whole career off those two songs.
It must have gotten bigger faster than anybody could have ever anticipated, right?
I mean, it feels like as soon as we did the first album, we toured it relentlessly for 18 months. I mean, you know, say we moved out of our apartments and then just moved into an RV. But it felt like it took a minute, you know? I mean, probably not to the general public because all of a sudden that one record hit and then we're on TRL with Carson Daly. You know, it was so surreal because here we are with the Backstreet Boys and our video and their video for weeks were number one. This, you know, was kind of like the battle of the boy bands.
I'm sure that's the battle.
I said that.
That's the battle you thought you'd be in, you against the Backstreet Boys.
You know, I wanted to be famous.
I was in college at the time. I do remember the Freak on a Leash video was huge on MTV. That was one of the bullets, right? Where they was going. It was,
yeah, they did the slow motion.
It was a big. I can see why you guys got so big so fast, or at least, you know, relatively to the festival, you know,
right?
Memories and stuff.
Yeah, it was. It was huge, and it was sort of, it's never this way for anybody, a comedian or a band or anything, but it was like, I'd never heard of Korn, and then it was nothing but Korn at some point, and it wasn't really a slow dimmer switch, it was just like a toggle. Just right. Boom, just Korn on, and then at some point, I was trying to have these guys research that Jim Rose thing, because I was trying to figure out where you guys played. And where that was, but I remember going with the band to do a show, and then Jim Rose was this kind of freak who would get out there and do puppetry of the penis. And
it was crazy. And these were kids he was in front of, and we're just like, this is, I don't know what to do. Should we leave?
They're going to put him on a list.
And he's like, hey, check this out, kids. And he's like doing some weird.
I call this the turtle.
Yeah.
That's right. I engulf my entire. I put my ball sack over my forehead.
It's a sailboat.
And it's like, what? And there's like 14-year-old corn fans like in the audience.
It's like, not right. Everybody's uncomfortable. And he's like, you know, we all were hammered.
I had a great. It was at like a Tower Records in Fresno or something.
That sounds
like,
right.
It was someplace like that.
Somewhere like that, yeah.
And I've told you guys this story, but I remember very clearly. Like, so he's in the back, like by the loading dock, like at a record store or something like that. Now all the Korn fans and everyone's like in front, and he's like smoking a cigarette back there, and he's getting ready to go on, and I said something like, so you married or something? And he's like, yep. And then I was like, oh, okay. What's your wife do? And he's like, she travels with the circus. Like, she's part of the show. And I was like, oh, that's nice that she gets to travel with your wife and work with your wife and be part of the business with your wife. What does she do for the circus? And he's like, she shoots fire out of her pussy. And I'm like, oh, well, there you go. Like,
you're thinking like accounting, bookkeeping.
Ticket sales.
I could make like a 2-hour reel of me saying to people, well, good for you. There you go. I think I better head back in and bring the boys out on stage about now. But there you go.
She's front of house.
I remember thinking, how pissed is her gynecologist? You know what I mean? Like, a lot of gynecologists are good pissed. They're like, you're not wearing pure cotton underpants? This is bullshit. You're going to get a like, I'm shooting fire out of my pussy.
Have you been shooting fire out of your pussy? Don't lie to me. I can always tell.
Oh, man. Yeah, to make that even crazier was, you know, we were all partying at a hotel party, and him and some of his friends came, you know, on one of those nights because we did this whole Korn campaign tour where we were doing two in-stores a night or two a day. We were doing two cities a day. And the record company gave us a private jet, and they said, Here's all the beer that you want. You know, just go do this. And we're like, this is so stupid. And then once we got on the plane, we're like, this is fucking cool.
Yeah, I think we flew on a private jet out there.
Yeah, I think so.
And it's also, and you tell me, but I've found that the people that are making the schedule, you know, the road is... It's basically just filled with bear traps and landmines and pits filled with sharpened bamboo. And
right.
it's all one big booby trap because
totally.
You take a bunch of young guys, whether they're in a band or comedians or whatever, from Bakersfield in their early 20s. All of a sudden, you give them a private jet, as much beer
Forget
and Jack
it.
Daniels as they want. And then you create a schedule, too. Like, you got to do two. Like,
and
the person
like, what?
That makes the schedule isn't executing.
Right.
They're not
Remember,
there.
You're on
they're
time,
not
you're
there.
Late.
Right. They're not there. Right. You're there. Yeah. And they're right. like, you got to do two. And then I set up a radio interview at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. And then we're going back out again. It's like.
Anyway, it's 5 o'clock. We're going home.
Yeah. The people who set up the itinerary aren't getting near any of these places. And before you know it, it's all just places that were meant to drink. Limousines
right.
and private airplanes.
Right.
Well, you'd
and
be
then
a
the
fool.
Hotel.
And hotels. You'd be a fool not to be drunk in any of those places.
It was insanity. It was insanity. And then you have the one assistant or the intern with the schedule piece of paper, and he's hammered, you know?
Right.
It's like, you got to leave unless you're going to drink with us.
Right.
So, you know.
I really think that like the NFL does with the young guys coming into the league, and they give them the whole thing with about how to handle your money and how not to get taken or don't get anyone pregnant or don't blah, blah, blah. Like, they really need to assign some sort of sober custodian or something. Like,
please welcome Gene Simmons.
Yeah.
Right.
Listen to me right now.
Yeah, you really need one Jew in that group somewhere. Or Dr. Drew or somebody. Like, somebody. It is the lunatics guarding the asylum. They've taken over the asylum, right? There's nobody telling you what to do.
No.
And every idea is a bad idea, right?
Yeah. It's like, why do you want to go there? We're going to go here first. That's not on the way to the liquor store.
Right.
We're going to go to the liquor store first.
So was there just an insane amount of drinking on those?
It was insane. I mean, we were like falling over during the signings. And then there's 1,000 people, you know, in line to get our autograph on the Follow the Leader record. So they're just coming through like cattle. And we're trying to sign every single person, every band member. And it was just literally, I remember at one point, Fieldy is like, his head is down in my lap. because he's passed out. And then it was like, hey, man, wake up. And it was just.
How old was, what was the average age of all the
Guys in the band?
Guys in
probably
the band.
Back then, at that moment, I'd say 26.
Perfect. Yeah.
It's impossible. it's an impossible combination, especially where everyone comes from, right?
I mean, you know, we didn't grow up with that kind of lifestyle. So when we were introduced to it, it was like, we thought we were, this is what you're supposed to do, you know, party.
Everyone grew up in Bakersfield.
Yep.
Everyone went to like the same high school.
Yeah, that's how I met Brian Head, our the other guitar player, and met Fieldy and all these guys. We all just went to high schools and we started playing in bands together. And we formed one band and then we moved to Burbank, which was on Verdugo. We all, there's seven of us, lived right here in Burbank. And it was, I don't know, it was, the rent was crazy. And we're panhandling at this gas station over here, this Arco.
Mm-hmm.
We would pretend that we were out of gas and we would say, hey, you know, we'd see somebody pull in, nice old lady.
Mm-hmm.
And say, hey, can we have some money? Our car ran out of gas, and we live in Bakersfield, but we didn't live in Bakersfield then. We lived in Burbank.
This is the proof I needed because I have paid for so many people's gas at gas stations.
Really?
Yes.
And then, so either they'd leave a few dollars on the pump and be like, oh, yeah. So we'd end up with maybe $5 and then a full tank of gas. We'd go straight to the liquor store with the money we got to buy booze.
Smart.
Yeah, man.
Diabolical.
I can't believe I'm alive.
Yeah, how much of it is sort of washed from your recollection?
There's bits and pieces that float around, but I remember a lot of venues, like a lot of places that we played, like the one, the Edge Fest. I remember that now. A lot of venues around the world, I remember, and I'm really good with directions. Like, oh yeah, I know that restaurant, and we're in Rome or Italy or we're in Switzerland, and I know how to get around these towns and. So some of it has been burned into the brain somewhere.
I remember when we shot the bit, I was like, well, I know the guys from Korn. And you guys were playing the Forum, I think, when we did the Man Show bit. Was it the Forum?
The Honda Center.
Oh,
wow.
The Honda Center.
He's very good.
I'm old. I didn't even know the Honda Center was built back then. It must have been brand
new. It was brand new.
It was brand new. Yeah. And so they're playing the Honda Center. How many thousand seats in that place?
Probably 15.
Yeah. And it's all sold out for multiple shows and stuff. And me and Jimmy sort of showed up. And I, the vibe I got from the band, who probably, you know, probably had a couple of beers, was sort of, and certainly a lot of the guys who like work for the band, which is like when you film something, you're doing a bit. In our mind, we're doing a comedy bit. In some people's minds, we're just doing what we're doing. Like, Jimmy's walking around pissing on people. And at some point, like, some of the tech guys and roadie guys were sort of halfway between this is a bit and halfway between what the fuck
stop
is going
on. My
and, like, what's going on? Like, people, everyone got what the joke was, but they were sort of half in and half out. Like,
right.
What did we sign up for and what is going on? Do you have a recollection of that?
I remember some of the guys coming to me and go, what's going on with these two? And we're filming something. And they're like, okay, do you want me to throw them out? I'm like, no, we're doing this thing. And then when we invited you guys on stage,
right.
That's when they're like, is it okay that they're up here? Remember there was a moment of weird,
yes.
Like, you weren't even sure if you should be up there.
It was a little Sasha Baron Cohen-esque, but I mean... There is a thing where everyone's watching it. Like when you do a bit, everyone's watching it in a context. When you get in a pilot's outfits and go to LAX and get drunk, when you're in it, you're living it. Like you are living
Captain.
That. Later on, it gets edited and people sit around
the edited version.
And laugh.
Oh, yeah. There's the... Oh, my God.
And laugh at it.
Look how happy that head is on the ride there.
Just giving him the finger.
He's having a great day. You know, when we play shows in LA, too, there's so many, they're family members and it's friends that you haven't seen in 20 years. People that just, you know, you're just bombarded with. And then they come in with their crew and we're like, oh my God, I got six kids here and now they want to do this. And you're a bit stressed out. So that would probably explain why he looked like that.
Yeah, my sense from the band is that they sort of knew we were doing a comedy bit, but not totally sure what was going on. And when then Jimmy started peeing on everybody, they were like pissed. I pardon the pun.
Good.
This is. Well, they should have been. All right. Should we bring Brandon, the subject of the doc, in here? And we'll bring him in. I'll tell you guys about ExpressVPN. Purchasing online or accessing your email puts your private information at risk. You're being tracked by social media sites, marketing companies, and mobile internet providers. I decided to take my privacy back with ExpressVPN, easy-to-use app you can run seamlessly in the background of your computer, phone, or tablet. ExpressVPN secures and makes your internet browsing anonymous by encrypting your data and hiding your public IP address. Less than $7 a month for a little something called peace of mind. Comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Rated number one VPN service by TechRadar. If you ever use public Wi-Fi and you want to keep the hackers from seeing your data, ExpressVPN is the solution. Right, Dawson?
Protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 months free at expressvpn.com/Adam. That's ExpressVPN.com/Adam. For 3 months free with a one-year package, visit expressvpn.com/Adam to learn more.
Oh, the Honda Center was Arrowhead Pond.
Yeah. Oh, Arrowhead, yeah.
There's the pond. Right. Yes. All right. So now we've gotten it straightened out. Brandon Mendenhall is here. Good to see you, Brandon.
Hey, how are you?
Yay, Brandon. Mind over matter. He's the subject of the docs. Very moving. Brandon, you were born with cerebral palsy, yes?
Yes.
And you were always, I mean, you're always a metal fan, but you became a Korn fan when?
I heard the first Korn record when I was like 11, and everything changed after that. Like, it just kind of gave me something to grab onto and believe in.
And I know you wanted to play the guitar, and the doctors are like, probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
But Monkey had a hand injury in the chain of an ATV.
I had an ATC that I was, you know, sneaking out and just being a terrible fucking kid. And I was 12, and I got the end of my finger chopped off in the chain and sprocket. Mm-hmm. And so the doctor told me, you know, maybe you should take up an instrument, and maybe that'll help rehabilitate your hand. And I was like, Dad, guitar.
Make me cool.
Doctor's orders.
I swear. And that's how I started playing guitar.
Wow. That's great. I love that doctor.
I love that doctor. I should go give him a 20.
So, Brandon, you sort of took a page out of Monkey's doctor's book.
Dr. Phil.
Dr. Monkey book.
Yeah.
Curious George's book.
Monkey was a punk, so I thought I could be a punk to my grandparents and be like, well, Monkey cut his finger off. And they sew it back on, and he's opening for Megadeth right now. And I have all five of my fingers, so I'm doing this.
You're already ahead of the game.
Yeah. You guys open for Megadeth?
Dude, it was fucking brutal. They hated us, those fans. So I think some of them like gravitated towards it, but there was a handful of every people. They would flip us off. I got a knife thrown at me on stage.
I was going to say, didn't they throw like pocket knives at you?
Yeah. It was a cheese spreader.
It was crazy. I was like, this is the last Megadeth tour we're ever going to do.
Was Nick Menza drumming for Megadeth when you opened for him?
Exactly.
That was my grade school best buddy.
Man.
That guy died tragically.
I know, it's really sad.
It is really sad. I mean, I brought it up, but the guy was went to Colfax Elementary with him. In a weird, full just circle of everything. So his dad is a pretty famous saxophonist named Don Menza.
I didn't know that.
He was Cleto's saxophone teacher.
No kidding.
Cleto of Jimmy Kimmel and his house band.
Damn, that's crazy.
So Don Menza, Nick Menza was my buddy from Colfax and Walter Reed and blah, blah, blah. And we'd like walk over to his house and all that. And then he became the drummer. And then he died at the Baked Potato, which is a jazz place. Just literally just after finishing a set, like just a couple of years ago. Super tragically.
He didn't even finish it. He was three songs into the set.
Oh, really?
Oh, he died pretty much on stage.
Yeah, he was on stage.
Wow.
That's sad.
A weird. And also, he was always a real sweet guy. And his dad is still around and still playing.
Oh, shit.
Which is crazy. But I always feel horrible when, you know, the obviously the parents outlive the child.
Know. That's not right.
It isn't. I did a Crank Anchors bit once, and I explained to the person who was on the other phone, I don't know why, what I was doing, but I said, no child should ever have to bury a parent. And the person went, amen. Amen.
You got that right.
That's like, I realized at that point, if you say anything with enough gravitas, people will agree with you.
Feel you, brother.
So, Brandon, how did you make, now, how did Korn and Brandon then get connected? How did they become connected? And how does Nate and the doc work into this whole thing? Because I was following it along with Nate, but I don't know all the nuts and bolts.
We met because I have this crazy Korn tattoo of monkey head on my shoulder blades. And it's kind of the thing. I didn't do it to be weird. It was my tribute, my thank you, to say, like, you know, these guys inspired me to push through my disability and pursue guitar. So I tattooed these caps on my back. They saw the tattoo at a show, brought me backstage, threw me in a room with monkey head. I was like 19. I couldn't even talk. Completely starstruck. And then we met 7 years after that in Hollywood at the Kimmel Show.
That's right.
Oh,
you
wow,
were walking
really coming
through
around.
And you damn near pulled me out of a security pick.
Oh, yeah, because you were in line.
Yeah, and then we exchanged info, and it's been ever since then, you know?
The part where you tattoo your heroes on your back is good.
Why did that go around the news these days?
Doesn't always work, yeah. I do regret my Cosby and Louis C.K. tattoo I put on.
The big caption, make him laugh.
It's not going. Not,
but I think that's
going
sort
over
of,
the way I'd like.
That ambition showed, like, that got him into the door to meet us.
Yeah.
And so.
A commitment.
Yeah, commitment. And then, what? So he was living in, you were living in Illinois.
Yeah, I grew up.
And we came through there touring.
I grew up in a trailer park 60 miles south of Chicago. And in high school, I got this tattoo. And I was actually bullied through the tattoo, of all things. People, the jocks, like, picked on me for it.
They were.
But, like, fuck that band. You're not going to like them in 20 years. Like, what are you doing?
So it wasn't cerebral palsy that got you bullied. It was the.
Well,
corn tattoo. The corn tattoo.
Great.
Everything, man. Yeah. I was just outcasted for everything.
The joke is so aggressively on those dudes now. It's amazing.
I know. Thanks.
Well, hopefully they'll be watching Mind Over Matter. It's available now on Amazon, iTunes, Google Play. And another great doc done by our own Nate Adams, everybody. All right, Monkey and Brandon, thank you guys for coming in. Korn. What do we got? If you want to see some, where should we go for Korn dates, Monkey?
Probably KornOfficial.com.
KornOfficial.com. They're playing. They're going to be in Mexico. They're being Jacksonville. They're all over the place. So just go to KornOfficial.com. Oh, and the Korn Coffee.
Yeah.
Available at Korn Official as well. We'll be sampling that in a moment. All right. We will take ourselves a quick break. We'll come back with the news and Gina Grad right after this.
Thursday, February 7th at 10E in downtown Los Angeles, Corolla Drinks presents the 10E Booze and Book Club, featuring Ghost, My 30 Years as an FBI Undercover Agent, with author Michael R. McGowan. One of the cartel members we had arrested agreed to cooperate. Some of what he told us pointed to corruption at the very highest levels of the Mexican government. When we quickly relayed this very important news to FBI HQ in Washington, we were told to stand down, because what we were pursuing, namely the links between the Sinaloa cartel and the Mexican government, were, in HQ's words, outside the scope of your original objective. February 7th at 10E. Come on out and enjoy a Mangria signature cocktail. Hear me read a chapter from Ghost and meet legendary FBI undercover agent Mike McGowan and his co-author Ralph Pizzullo. This event is free, but space is limited. Just click the registration link at adamcarolla.com.
P
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money.